My guest is writer Ursula Le Guin. In their book, Alive and Writing, Interviews with American Authors, Larry McCaffrey and Cinda Gregory write, Ursula Le Guin is probably as responsible as any other living writer for changing our notions of science fiction and fantasy. Le Guin's fictions transcend genres. Typically, they're a sophisticated blend of myth, fable, political inquiry, and metaphysical parable. Her art takes us on a circular journey to the future and then back again to the world around us now, for not only is she a wonderful spinner of fantastic tales, she also makes us take note of the words and cultural assumptions with which we construct our present. Among her best-known works are The Left Hand of Darkness, The Earthsea Trilogy, and The Dispossessed. Le Guin also writes nonfiction. She's collected some of her essays, speeches, and reviews in the new book, Dancing at the Edge of the World. In one of the essays, Le Guin wrote that it took her years to realize that one reason she chose to write in such marginally respected genres as science fiction and fantasy was to be free from academic pressure. But there was another reason.
I could sell it. That was a large reason. That was actually... It's how I broke into publishing, and that is how I became a science fiction writer to begin with. And I was fantasy, I guess, before science fiction. But anyway, I could sell in that genre. They understood what I was doing.
Did you ever write for the pulps?
Well, that's what you wrote for.
Mm-hmm. No, that was really a very macho kind of medium.
It was male dominated. It wasn't particularly macho. Mm-hmm. Really. And they seemed to be quite ready to have women writing it and reading it by the time I got around to it.
So you didn't have
but
to use a pen name.
It was very male, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to use a pen name to get your story sold.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No way.
Did you feel that your concerns or that the language that you used was different from your male counterparts?
Yeah, but it's really hard to pin down exactly how. Because there are also male science fiction writers who are not particularly interested in the technical details and stuff. There's no less scientific interest. It did seem as if it wasn't just the women coming into the field. There was a whole generation that of science fiction fantasy writers that I kind of came in with. And both men and women, I would say, were more interested in people, in the human element of these stories. They kind of humanized science fiction.
One of your best-known books, Left Hand of Darkness, was in part about gender, and it took place in a world where people were androgynous. You have an essay about your thoughts on androgyny in your new book. Why did you want to write a novel in which the characters were androgynous?
Well, I wrote it in 1967, which is really when... I think when feminism was beginning to kind of come alive again, and people were asking questions like, what is the difference between men and women? How much is biological, how much is culture, and so on, all those questions. And one way to ask those questions is to, actually my way of doing it mainly, is to write a novel about it and sort of set up a situation in which women turn into men, turn into women, monthly, as it were. And see what happens.
Would you describe the system that you created, the sexual system, the sexual traits that people have?
These people are most of the time are actually neuter. They are not sexually active. And once a month, you, as they call it, go into Kemmer, and you, at that point, you become either a man or a woman. You are physiologically gendered. And you take on sexuality, your sexual drive becomes very intense. And if you're with somebody who is already going to Kemmer as the other sex, you're likely to be the other sex. They trigger the opposites, but not always. So the point is that you can be the father of a child 1 month and then get pregnant the next, which makes, obviously, it would make certain changes in society.
You have an essay about books and babies that was also excerpted in the New York Times Book Review recently.
Yeah.
And this is about what you think has been the refusal of our society to grant women both the right to be creative and to have children at the same time. Women seem to feel, well, society seems to have thought that women had to make a choice, one or the other. And you think that many feminists have felt that way too, that you had to make the choice and that the choice would be for work over children.
Yeah, right.
Now, in your life, you've had both. You have three children?
Yes.
Is that right?
And I don't know how many books. I think something like 25 books. As I say somewhere, thank goodness it wasn't the other way around. Yes, which in a sense gives me not only the possibility of talking about it, but I feel a certain obligation to sort of speak up and stand up and be counted as a woman who has had kids and brought them up and also done creative work, which particularly in the arts, there does seem to be almost a sort of an agreement that this can't be done. And as you said, it doesn't come only from the misogynist side of things. It has come from many women, many feminists. And here it gets really sticky, and I genuinely don't want to hurt people here, because women are always being told, you must do this and you can't do that and so on. And the fact is, creative work has replaced having a family for some women. That's fine. Having a family has replaced creative work for other women. That's fine. Then there's some of us who really need to do both and are perfectly capable of doing both. Another thing that I found kind of reading all the stuff I read to write that article is how, I'm talking particularly about writers because that's what I know most about, how women who write, who have children, their work tends to get disappeared. They're not quite respectable. The few women who are counted part of the great canon of English literature tend to be childless and often unmarried. Apparently, I have to say, the men seem to prefer it that way.
How do you think being a mother has helped and hurt you as a writer?
That's a very large question. There is a time during one's life when, if you are responsible for the care of your kids, it is very hard to do other creative work. You have to do it around the edges, in the middle of the night, or you never can get up before your kids, so it's usually late at night. Or if you have the money, you hire some kind of babysitter or some kind of child care. It's hard. Your energies, your creative energies, are being spread thin and strained. On the other hand, you are living an extremely rich life at the same time, and this is going to enrich your work, inevitably, I think. It may not seem so at the time, but one of the points I tried to make in the article is, after all, babies don't stay babies very long, whereas writers live for decades, and you do outlive your babies.
Do you keep up reading other people's fantasy and science fiction books?
Well, I did a lot. I guess I kind of OD'd. I'm not keeping up as much lately.
What did you OD on?
Well, I guess I just read too much. I have a feeling that at present, both fantasy and science fiction as genres, as publishing genres, are a little bit locked in a kind of self-replicating groove, and that there's not as much risk-taking work or original work being done. But there's some very good writers coming up. I find, at this point, particularly some of the young women writers. But I think one reason also I'm reading less of that particular thing is I had a lot of catching up of reading women novelists and poets to do, just in general. And so the last 8-10 years, I've been kind of completing my education, because I was well-educated in literature, but it tended to be mostly literature by men. So with the help of things like the Norton Anthology and Virago and other reprint houses, I've been reading a lot of stuff by women, and it's been very, very educational.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your writing. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.